I'm Alan Hardy.
Hi, this is Matty Cash.
Hi, I'm Darren Fletcher.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Welcome to the home of the oldest professional football club in the country.
The expectation of the fans now is to be talking about promotion.
As a team, as a squad of players, we've come a long way.
Goals from Jason Cummings and from Kieran Dowell in that match.
The City Ground's got that special buzz about it.
Obviously, it's such a big club and the fan base is massive.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to Over the Trent on University Radio Nottingham, your podcast covering all the happenings at Notts County and at Nottingham Forest. Now on the show today, we'll be hearing from Aitor Karanka, who will be looking forward to this weekend's game.
He's more experienced now than he was in Middlesbrough 2 years ago. He has character. He's the kind of player who always won the ball. So it's not the kind of place who disappears when the things are going wrong.
We also heard from Cardiff loanee Lee Tomlin at this week's press conference at the City Ground.
He still scares me now. He really does. Like he's one manager that like, intimidates you. Not in a bad way, like he bullies or anything like that. But what he's done in the game, his authority, he's just how strict he is, how he wants people to play. And he knows how football should be played.
And in a special Q&A at Beer Keller yesterday, Kevin Nolan got to meet and greet Notts County fans and told a very funny story about his time living with Andy Carroll.
And I was just flicking in and I've walked to the front door and I've gone, oh shit. Locked the door and walked back in and went, Andy's car's on fire.
I'm joined on today's podcast with Liam Kenny. Now, we're going to start on a slightly low note. Obviously, the 8-1 defeat we haven't yet fleshed out and got our real teeth into yet on Over the Trent. I went down to the Liberty Stadium and I assure you it wasn't a pretty performance by Kevin Nolan's boys, but ultimately a learning curve for them, I suppose, a learning curve for Nolan and a learning curve for the team.
Yeah, and once again, just sort of does go to show how well they had done to even reach that round. You know, the golfing class, I mean, Kevin was speaking about it last night. They've gone away when he was at Bolton his days and faced Man United sides and had 6 or 7 ones, and that's the same league. So when you're considering a Premier League side up against a side that nearly dropped out of the Football League entirely at the end of last season, it really does put it into perspective a little bit. And, you know, like we did say, the chance to really beat them was at Meadow Lane, and there's not too much to read into the performance. All I would say is that they can't really allow there to be a hangover. Kevin Nolan and his management team this week now have got to eradicate that from memory as quickly as possible and look ahead to Barnet. And just because after that 90 minutes is finished, if it's a good result, Swansea's forgotten. But if it's a bad result, it's sort of a bad week. Then we've lost 8-1, then we've lost to bottom of the league Barnet.
Of course, Kevin Nolan, a young manager, he's definitely learning his trade, of course, in League Two. What do you think he'll take out from that performance from his players and as a kind of tactical learning curve?
I think he'll learn that no matter how well you prepare for games, there is always that chance that they are going to be better than you. I know that sounds a very obvious point to make, but I'm sure through training through the week they were resolute, they were grinding it out, and they probably went there with quite a lot of expectation of being able to cause an upset. But then you go there and everything went wrong on the night that could have, really, didn't it? Every goal at the top corner, the first 4 or 5 strikes by Swansea looked like scoring if they didn't score. And I think he learnt a lot about the actual personnel within his squad. I think Carl Dickinson is really, he's going to have a long hill to climb to get back into the side after that. But I think the issue he's got really is Dan Jones would have put in a much better performance than Carl Dickinson did, but obviously he's pretty injury prone, so he isn't able to fill in those games. Then the loss of Elliot Hewitt as well didn't help. So as I said earlier, everything that could have gone wrong did do, really. And it was just one of them days.
The point about Carl Dickinson is quite pertinent as well, because it comes under the bracket of the fact that both fullbacks were changed for that performance, of course, on the other side with Nicky Hunt coming in for Toots as well. Given that kind of change, do you think that was the right one from Nolan? Being that Nicky Hunt and Carl Dickinson aren't exactly the most pacey customers in League Two, and especially against the likes of Narsing and Dyer as well on the other side, they were, you know, absolutely done all ends up, weren't they?
To be fair, Tootle, he's ill, so he wasn't able to play in the game. So I think Nicky Hunt was one that was sort of forced in there. I would have seen Elliot Hewitt actually playing right back if he wasn't ill instead of Nicky Hunt. And I think what that did with Carl Dickinson on the other side, as you say, he had Leroy Narsing and Nathan Dyer doubling up on him. him, and he was almost running in circles throughout the game. And even on our attacks, he was quite important in that. When, let's say, Alessandro could get it to the byline, he would need an overlap or a pass it back. And I noticed in the first half about three different occasions that Dickinson actually lost the ball, and then he's suddenly on the 18 yard of Swansea's pitch, and Leroy Narsing is on the halfway line ready to explode with Nathan Dyer ahead of him as well. So tactically, I think if there was another left back available, Dickinson wouldn't have played, and he has really been exposed there with those two, you know, pace merchants essentially on one wing against him, doubling up.
Just an eye on Swansea as well. Of course, the reverse fixture was 1-1 at Meadow Lane a couple of weeks back, which in a game in which Notts County performed admirably in that particular encounter. But you look at that squad which faced Notts County on Tuesday night, and it was, you know, Premier League class all over. It was definitely first team level, and especially when you look at the goals of the likes of Tammy Abraham, Tom Carroll's goal in the second half, that was just
stunning.
Picture book, wasn't it?
Yeah, stunning, absolutely. And one thing I would take away is they've been beaten by a Premier League winner. Nathan Dyer is a Premier League winner, of course, with Leicester while he was on loan there, and his class is just so many levels higher than where Notts County are at the moment, and that's the gap that they are trying to bridge. Now, to take away from the fact that they've had a 1-1 draw at home with Swansea, and then they've gone away, it's a Monday night, Tuesday night, whatever it was, cold, 400 travelling fans, which I'd like to just congratulate, by the way, absolutely superb throughout the whole duration of the match, even at 8-1 down. And I would just like to say, from my perspective, I was watching it on television, Joe, you were there, we couldn't hear Swansea. We could only hear the Notts County fans from start to finish. That was really brilliant. But yeah, apart from that, it just now needs to be eradicated from memory. Fresh now, look at Barnet on Saturday and just put it all to bed.
I was going to say, the fact that the game was on BBC One might hinder a lot of supporters making the long trip. I think 392 miles round trip it was. We got back at 3:30 in the morning on the Notts County bus, and spirits were so high even after the game. You know, they were still praising Alan Hardy and Nolan and what they're doing throughout the season. So there's very much this sense that Notts County fans, you know, can take the mick out of themselves a bit, and the fact that they lost the game, but also be appreciative at the same time and looking at the bigger picture.
Of course, yeah, because if you look at last year's cup run, we lost in round two to Peterborough, and now we've lost in round four to Swansea. So the whole day out, the whole being even involved, you know, we've been down to two live draws at Meadow Lane for the cup, and it has been a little bit of a really good journey. I've read a lot of fans online this week saying that they blame Kevin Nolan for the defeat because of his team selection. Well, are you going to blame him for beating Brentford? You're going to blame him for coming back from 2-0 against Bristol Rovers? In my opinion, they shouldn't have been Bristol Rovers. They were 2-0 down in 10 minutes. That's the first round of the cup. Now they're in the fourth round, and as you say, they are the fans that you probably travelled with are a lot more grounded and understand where Notts County have come from, because they're the loyal supporters that followed them away and will no doubt be at Barnet again on Saturday.
Yeah, just one final point on that, and to play devil's advocate with the point that you just made as well about the team selection that Kevin Nolan made. There was one particular factor within that. We've mentioned Carl Dickinson and Nicky Hunt, but John Stead up front on his own has been a criticism of the team which many fans have had over the last couple of weeks, the kind of 4-5-1 outlook. I mean, Jonathan Fort came on in the second half, but that is something, an area definitely that Nolan needs to look at.
Yeah, and I think he's been guilty of just being a bit romantic there, because obviously John Stead has scored in every round of the cup previous, and you can't really drop him. But then I think Shola should have been there as well, because their Premier League experience together accumulates to far more than Swansea's front line would have. So I think, yeah, he's been guilty there, just trying to be a bit romantic. Yeah. But John Stead will always give you that goal. But I do quite agree there that Shola and Stead should have both played together just to help each other out a little bit, because you did see Stead for the first half. He sort of looked like a man that was carrying the expectation all on his own. And I think that would have helped with a second man up there as well to bridge the gap between the isolated Stead and your Lewis Alessandras and your George Grants, because none of them had an impact on the game whatsoever. I think that was probably George's poorest game I've seen in a county shirt as well.
Well, me and Danny Estrich went down to take a fan's eye view of the trip down to Swansea in Notts County's fourth round FA Cup replay, and we documented the high spirits of the fans heading down to the Liberty Stadium. You can also see this on Notts TV's website, as well as the package was aired on Wednesday night. The long journey to Swansea for the big FA Cup match began at Meadow Lane, where the fans gathered to get going. The travelling fans were in high spirits for the 400-mile round trip to the Liberty Stadium.
Come in, boys!
It's all about faith
It's the FA Cup, it's magic, so fingers crossed we'll do well, I think.
How are you feeling about the game today?
Very excited, looking forward to it, and hope we're going to do as well as we did on Saturday. Well, when we played this first half and Saturday. Saturday they were brilliant. Really were, so we're all fingers crossed, aren't we?
Yes.
Hopeful. And some of their players have been injured. It's a shame, but they won't be there today.
We'll be special as well. Which players are you looking forward to seeing?
Well,
the whole team. We love it.
We love all the team.
We think the team are doing great. They've just moulded. It's great. You can see that they're happy together. They're working well with the trainer. And we go to one or two things with the manager that he puts on extra. Like when the draws were on, we all went in. And it's so enthusiastic. Everybody is enthusiastic. It's so different, isn't it? It's lovely. It's a pleasure to be part of Notts County.
Yes. And how has Alan Hardy changed things at the club, you know, in terms of ticket prices, things like that?
Well, he's doing that. He's doing what he can. He's working his way round. He did say that at the last meeting, didn't he? Working his way round. He started in the children's end. He's improving everything. He's putting offers on. I mean, like Saturday, it was fantastic. £2 a ticket, and we had all those people there. Never. I mean, we've made a record, haven't we? So it was fantastic. And he's lovely. He was going out as I came in to go into the ground today, and he was going... But he associates with everybody. It's wonderful. You feel that he cares.
It's an exciting day. It's an exciting day for everybody. Especially the people that are travelling as well. Obviously, we get to see it on telly anyway. But for us, we're going to enjoy the day. Got nothing to lose, so it's just enjoying the day.
Well, we're joined here with Doug Pullen, the sporting liaison officer at Notts County. You've enjoyed the trip down today, haven't you, Doug?
It's been a really good trip, and some really good people on the coach, all very well behaved. We had a quiz, and that was good fun running it, and just happy to be here. Fabulous stadium.
Yeah, fourth round of the FA Cup. Obviously, the replay was 1-1, but what's your predictions ahead of tonight?
Well, it's always going to be a tough one, isn't it? But you never know. This team is capable of springing surprises, and tonight might be one such night.
Now, you're a supporter liaison officer. Just tell us a little bit more about what that kind of role entails.
Sure, it's really acting as a bridge between fan and clubs in both directions. We're very fortunate to have Alan Hardy as our owner and chairman. He's very good on social media, and quite frankly, he's his own supporter liaison officer. So it's a pleasure doing the job at the moment.
Well, 392 miles this round trip is, Danny, to Swansea City, but we've made half of the journey. We're finally here at the Liberty Stadium ahead of kick-off, the FA Cup fourth round replay. What are your thoughts prior to the game?
I think Notts County have a chance. I know Swansea have had an upturn recently, having beaten Liverpool, beaten Arsenal, but Notts County flying high in League Two, they've brought a lot of fans from Nottingham. And the players will be up for this. They've got nothing to lose. They can throw everything they can at this Swansea side. And, you know, they drew 1-1. You know, this is a replay. They've shown that they can match them. And hopefully something special might happen tonight.
Of course, over 500 Magpie supporters making the long journey down from Nottingham. Fantastic credit there has to go to the Notts County fan base and to the marketing team for enabling all these people to go down to the Liberty Stadium at such a relatively cheap price as well for tickets and travel.
Yeah, it's amazing. So for students, match tickets are only £10, and then the coach travel is £23. So for £33, you're getting a full travel and ticket, which is unbelievable. And it goes along with the rest of the things that Alan Hardy's been doing with Notts County this season. £2 tickets for Crewe just last week, where Notts County won 4-1. So a pretty amazing result for that game. And, you know, having done reduced ticket prices throughout the season, a lot of fan initiatives, a lot of, you know, events as well, like for the fifth round draw, they had an event, things like that. Getting the kind of club, the community spirit behind the club, and it definitely affects it. You can see the number of fans here today.
Of course, coming into this game on the back of a 4-1 win, a very much needed win at Meadow Lane, but do you think this cup match may, in a way, distract them from the League Four, maybe in a good way, perhaps?
You could say the cup runs maybe had a bit of an effect on the league form. Before Crewe, they only got 1 point in the last three games. But it's cup runs like this that are so special. You know, this is what the fans come out for. big matches against Premier League opposition, and you can call it a distraction all you want, but at the end of the day, this is the stuff that people remember, these trips. So I think it's really important. It's brilliant to be here.
And Notts have salvaged the goal back. It's now 3-1 at the Liberty Stadium. A goal courtesy of Nur Hussein, the Afghan midfielder, recently signed from Crystal Palace. The ball broke, a loose ball broke around the edge of the D, and Hussein swept home with a curled left-footed strike from the edge of the box. 3-1 now. Anything can happen with around 65 minutes left in this game. And it's another goal in the first half, right at the end of the opening 45 minutes, courtesy of another Tammy Abraham strike. It's two for him and two for Nathan Dyer in the first half. The goal coming, of course, just after Nur Hussein pulled one back for Notts. A brilliant left-footed curling strike from the edge of the 18-yard box going in off the post. But it's a goal right at the end of the half from Tammy Abraham. The ball came in after good work from Jordan Ayew on the right-hand side. A little bit of trickery, beating Carl Dickinson, the left-back. And then the ball came in and was swept home to the right bottom right-hand corner by Tammy Abraham, past Adam Collin, who again had no chance. Half-time then, 4-1 to Swansea City in this fourth-round FA Cup replay. Well, if you didn't think there'd be any more in this game and that Swansea would get completely bored and fed up of scoring, you're wrong, because it's 8-1 and a debutant has scored. Daniel James, who's come on for the home side, got a half volley, just bounced up off the turf very, very kindly for him. And the biggest cheer of the night you just heard there is because Notts had a corner, which I believe was only their second of the game, definitely their first in the second half. But anyway, back to Swansea's eighth goal. It was hit off the surface, a half volley from the debutant into the bottom right-hand corner, past Adam Collin, and it's now 8-1 to the home side. This is quite a drubbing for Kevin Nolan's team. But the Notts fans certainly are in high spirits. That's possibly the only positive thing you could say is left about this performance. Certainly hasn't been great on the pitch, but in the stands, the Notts fans have definitely done themselves very proud by staying vocal. Well, 8-1 here. It's finished at the Liberty Stadium. The Magpies haven't flown too far against the Swans here in this fourth round FA Cup replay. Two goals, both from Dyer and from Abraham in the first half. And a consolation at that point from Nur Hussein made the scores 4-1 going into the break. Then the Swans ran riot with goals from Routledge, from Norton, an absolutely stunning strike from Carroll, and then a goal for Daniel James on his debut for the home side. So it's 8-1, Notts County crash out of the FA Cup. Partially a blessing in disguise, as they now can concentrate on domestic league matters. Nonetheless, a drubbing here for Kevin Nolan's team. The county fans making for the exit in their droves. And we go again this weekend back in League Two action.
I guess it's just a cup, so I've got to look to focus on the league, but just felt like there was no fight there at all, so a bit disappointed.
And what do you make of all the fans coming along and travelling for the game?
Really good, like throughout the whole game. I think that was what kept it going, support and just having a laugh at the end. So at least it wasn't an all wasted journey, a bit of fun cheering and just having a laugh.
So now moving on to matters over the Trent just briefly, and Forest, a massive game coming up this weekend against Hull City. It's been quite a ride, hasn't it, since Karanka's come in. Of course, that 2-0 win away at Wolves was so well documented and, you know, did so well, but it's kind of slipped a little bit since then, hasn't it, Liam? What do you think Karanka's really got to analyse and look at on the training pitch ahead of this weekend?
Possibly scoring goals. Apart from the two goals scored against Wolves, I think they failed to register in all of Karanka's other games. So that'll be an area we'll be looking to improve on. One thing that I would say, the one week that he did have a full week to prepare his team for was the game against Wolves. We had a midweek game then at Preston, which obviously we all know what happened, and then obviously the exodus on the back of that. Eight new players then came in, and he hasn't had time to work with them or implement his style. They're just sort of all gelling together at the moment. Then they've gone and played High Fly in Fulham and lost 2-0. So on paper, it looks like they're in a really bad run of form, but now, you've got to remember Karanka's had a full week to work with that set squad. I imagine on Monday or Tuesday, from what I've been reading about how Karanka works, a team sheet would have been put up with a perspective who's going to start. Now I've heard is how based on your training people can be put in and then put back out. So I imagine a certain amount of players were told, you know, you are looking like you're going to start, and the work would have been done with them. But then you've also got the squad players then nipping on their heels in order to try and prove to Karanka, you know, I can do that job for you. I can make that tackle. I can, you know, score that goal. So I think this week now you'll see a full week of the Karanka's work, and then we should see a really pragmatic approach towards Hull City. If I were going to predict one thing ahead of it, I imagine that Forest will get a clean sheet.
It's one thing that's been very prominent throughout this season in the Forest squad, which is that, especially going forward in the attacking and midfield departments, there is such a fierce competition for places, almost a ridiculous amount. I mean, compared to the defence as well, when you've got such prominent issues there, glaring issues, which all fans have ranted and raved about on social media, about, you know, to play Worrell alongside a player that arguably Karanka should have signed in the transfer window, being namely Michael Dawson from Hull, but playing him alongside Mancien, just, you know, it's not really working at the moment. There's been so many mistakes throughout the campaign. Matt Mills, of course, has left the club now by mutual consent. It's quite weird, isn't it? The kind of the comparison between midfield and defence.
Yeah, it's like they've sort of stagnated over the last few years and not improved in the defence whatsoever. Now, whether that was down to people not being able to be moved on and needing to get wages off the books before re-signing new players. But if you have a look at the defence now compared to the start of January, two out, Matt Mills and Ndama Traore. And we've got Jose Fuentes and Tobias Figueiredo from Sporting Lisbon. And on paper, they've improved the side. Both of those players are better than what they had there before. Fuentes still needs to prove it, and I imagine we'll see more of him in the coming weeks. But Traore now has gone to Cardiff, and almost instantly, you see, I've just having a look from my Twitter feed, and almost instantly Cardiff fans are saying, oh, he's conceded us the first goal against Leeds. They did go on to win 2-1, I believe. But yeah, he didn't have a really good performance against Leeds, so it does prove that he did need to be shipped out alongside Matt Mills. And I think now that midfield's slightly settled with your likes of Ben Watson, he's got a 2.5-year deal. Joe Lolly's there on a 4.5-year deal. Still got Bouchalakis to bring into that as well. And then you've got your Benny Osborne's on a long-term deal. What I think we'll start to see now is the real scope of recruitment will fall on the defence. And now it's time to not only keep Joe Worrell, but bring someone in to illuminate how good he actually is.
Yeah, those two new arrivals there, the goalkeeper Campino and Juan Fuentes as well, will certainly bolster the defensive department. Interesting that he's brought in a keeper there as well. Of course, Stephen Henderson's gone out on loan, as we know, but Kostel Pantilimon, the experienced and very tall fellow, as we said, came in last weekend. But slightly harsh on Jordan Smith.
I know we've got Etimov still to play into that rank as well. But the thing that I find about that is that there are whispers that this isn't Karanka signing. Capina, he was actually at Olympiakos, who of course Marinakis is co-owner of as well. So there are whispers that sort of like a good comparison to bring it back to, I know it's a bit big time, but the Shevchenko signing at Chelsea, not a Mourinho signing, it was a Roman Abramovich signing for his own political game, which I think what Marinakis is doing here. So I don't know if we'll see him all that much, but I mean, he's played in the Champions League and the Europa League quite consistently for Olympiakos, so he's obviously got quality. The thing with Jordan Smith, we go back to it every week, he's a Notts lad, he's come from the youth academy system, he's made a save at the end of last season that has essentially kept Nottingham Forest in the Championship. All of a sudden he's had a couple of bad performances this season, which I think, the defense, if you look at the defence in front of him, would Pantilimon have saved those shots? Who knows? Probably not. And that's why I think Smith gets a lot of flack. He's young, he is quite a big character as well, but he doesn't seem to command that sort of respect from his centre-backs. But that he'll grow into that sort of role as he develops. But yeah, it is very harsh. But if you look at his competition now, he's had Stephen Henderson for the majority of the season. He's known that he's going to walk into the team. He's number one on the team sheet. Now he's got Pantilimon and Capino to deal with. He'll be a much better player for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you pick up on there, Liam, because Charlie McParlin on Notts TV's weekly discussion show on the local teams in the Nottingham area team talk, they discussed at length the fact that Jordan Smith has not been helped in any way, shape or form by those in front of him in the defence this season, and that is in fact where a lot of the errors have lied in a lot of the games, and that Jordan Smith has been a bit of a scapegoat for a lot of Nottingham Forest supporters. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, very much so. There's a lot of frailties at the back, and he came into the side last season under Warburton and started doing well. There's sort of a level of expectation on him then, and then they're expecting him to be Superman and make up for the frailties of Matt Mills and Michael Mancien that have gone on into the season, and you're going to even say Danny Fox into that and Traore as well. I think now it's just about stability. Like, I think Jordan needs to be told if he is now number two or number three, he needs to be made aware of that. And then if he is now, if he is still number one, well, I don't think he is, let's be fair, he's not, is he? But Pantelimon will probably be number one, I think. And it's now just about his development again. So get him back with Gary Brazil, get him working, and try and just make Jordan Smith the best player he could possibly be.
Absolutely. Well, another piece of news coming out of the City ground in recent days is that they have appointed a director of football, Luke Downing, who has been previously at Watford, Crystal Palace, Portsmouth and Leeds. That was what Karanka had to announce yesterday at the press conference at the City ground, where he was in attendance along with Cardiff City loanee Lee Tomlin.
I'm Les Brad, I'm Notts County's all-time high goal scorer, and you're listening to Over the Trent.
So let's start, a month you've been here now, 5 games have gone by. How's your assessment of how things have gone in your first month in charge?
Well, I could say that this month has started this week, because we've changed a lot of things, but I don't want to say that, because everything started 1 month ago. Because 1 month ago, and the games that we played, the training session that we had, told me that we had to do some changes here. And now, with especially in the squad, with the changes that we made in the squad, the team is almost completely new. And now is the first week that we had to prepare as a group on the pitch. So I am really pleased, because after a month we have better squad than we had at the beginning. I think the crowd has recovered again his passion for the club. And this is the main thing, that now, knowing that the results are not the best, we are growing, we are starting, and I am sure that we are in the right way.
Have you found it difficult having to make the big decisions? Because you have come in here and shaken things up, changed things a lot. Has that been tough, or is that part of being a manager?
No, I think it was easy, because you know, when you arrive, you try to feel what is happening, or what is right or what is wrong, and the decision that I had to take, they were a difficult decision, because again, I gave opportunities to every single player, except hands on the keeper. So I had the chance to change, because what I saw, especially on the pitch, the last 2 games, told me a lot of things. So I needed to change, and the main thing for me is that change was on the pitch last game, so everybody could feel that the intensity now is different, the commitment is different, the experience is different. And again, I am really pleased, because we are again restarting.
You mentioned the word commitment there. Is that something really important to you? Did you feel that some players didn't want to be here maybe when you first got here?
I think it was a how can I say it? Because sometimes I speak in English and I make mistakes, and it was a little bit of complacency. You know, you are in a big club, you earn good money, you have a good life, but nobody demands anything. So you are to the training ground, or you are coming to the offices, and you go back to your house and without responsibilities. And I think, and I said the first day, when you are in a club like Forest, you need to feel that responsibility. And everybody who is here since the new owner, the new chairman, the new CEO, and the new board arrived, should be to get promotion, and everybody needs to feel that responsibility.
And how have the new players all settled in? Do you know all their names yet? There's so many of them.
Yeah, I know, because I knew before they come here, so I know I know all of them. I said, and the main thing for me is that all of them are here because they wanted to come. They are not here because we offered them better money or much more money than other clubs. They were coming here because they believe in this project. They believe in this club. For all of them, it's important to play in a club like Forest with our history. So I'm really pleased because they know that it's not going to be easy to play. We have a lot of players, very good players, and it's a tough decision to choose 11 for Saturday. But again, I'm really pleased, and I prefer to have those problems.
So you're not worried then about how having, you know, a lot of players can bed in? It's hard, I suppose, halfway through a season to get 8 new players to all gel.
Sorry?
It's hard to get 8 new players to all work together, I guess. Is that a concern for you?
It's a little concern because again, in 4 days working, it's impossible to do or to find the things that you want to find. But again, it's not a short race. It's a long race, long journey, and we need to build. We first started 1 month ago. We did a very good and very important step 2 weeks or 1 week ago, and now it's just to keep going.
Can I ask you a little bit about Lee Tomlin? Because I think we're going to speak to him today. What did you see in him, and why did you want him here?
I like a lot this kind of players, because these kind of players are the kind of players who one day you want to kill him, and the following day he wins the game. Sorry. So I like his character. I know that for other managers maybe it's difficult to manage him, because again, he's the kind of player who is in the training ground and you want to kill him, and 1 minute later or 2 minutes later he scores an amazing goal. So he helped us a lot in Midra. I know how experience is now. He's more experienced now than he was in Midra 2 years ago. He has character. He's the kind of player who always won the ball. So he's not the kind of player who disappears when the things are going wrong. He always are there to receive the ball, to create something. And again, he's the kind of player who I like to have, knowing that sometimes I would like to kill him.
Welcome to Forest, how's it going?
So far so good. Obviously not the result we wanted the other day. After speaking to the gaffer, I think after the Preston game, he was determined to get players in. You know, there was a lot that need changing. But since I've been here, it's been good. I know what he's about, so it's exciting for me.
You said that game was embarrassing for in the Preston game you mentioned. Have you seen a change around here? I mean, obviously, you weren't here then, but have you noticed a good atmosphere?
To be fair, after the game, well, I think the day after the game, he ended up ringing me and speaking to me about it, and I actually felt like I played in it myself because he was sort of like telling me off about it. But I know what he's about. He's so passionate, but like in training every day, like now you see players that want to be here, want to work hard, want to win games, and it's everything that he wants.
What's he like then? And you know, how key was he really in getting there?
He still scares me now. He really does. Like he's one manager that like intimidation, not in a bad way, like he bullies or anything like that, but what he's done in the game. He's a fighter. He's just how strict he is, how he wants people to play, and he knows how football should be played. So it's good, like for me, to come back closer to home, to play games. But biggest one for me is to team up with Ito again.
Yes, you're a Leicester lad, aren't you?
Yeah, from Leicester, so it's not far at all for me. I know how big the club is. Obviously, living in Leicester and around it and things like that, but it's a huge club, and I appreciate it and humbled to be here.
Yeah, do you have family in the East Midlands, and are they pleased to have you a bit closer around? Or?
Yeah, literally everyone, family from Leicester, which they're not too happy me signing here, but it's literally football. It's so good to feel like I'm back home. I know it's only on loan till the end of the season, but I'm just excited to get going and play games and hopefully win games for Nottingham Forest.
You've been nice about the gaffer, and he was nice about you, but he did say that sometimes he wants to kill you. What does he mean by that?
I can remember one game against Preston at Middlesbrough. The first half, I was just getting it, like flicks and just basically showing off. But he just knows when I want to, I can take it past two, three, four people and go and score. But he just sort of says to me like all the time, I scored two that game in the second half. But he pulled me at half time. It was just basically a half time chant about me. And I just know I had to do something and we ended up winning, I think it was 2 or 3-1. Scored two, pulled me off, and I think he nearly choked me as well. But he just says, like, why don't you do it all the time? It's just, I don't know, it's a mind frame. But under the gaffer at Middlesbrough, he got a lot more out of me, and that's what I'm hoping to get.
If he knows how to get a lot out of players, do you think he'll be a success here at Forest?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. I'd literally put everything I had on it. He's that sort of manager. He don't accept losing. There was one time as well at Middlesbrough, you lost. He didn't talk to you till the next week, like giving the team talk for the next game. And you just can't cross him, and like you just don't want that atmosphere again. So it's like you just literally get used to winning. But if obviously you can't win every game, like Saturday, but he's seen a massive change, and he accepts it, but he just hates losing. And it's just his thing, and which is the right way.
So literally after a bad defeat at Middlesbrough, he didn't speak to you for a week?
No, for a week. He'd be there and he'd just be just walking around the training pitch, and you're training, you're working so hard, but everybody would just look over to see what he's doing, because that's what he brings to the team. Like, he's just such a big character. I know he's the manager, but it's just what he is, and like I say, it literally makes you work that so much harder for him and for everyone, so it's not like that again.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce, and you're listening to Over the Trent podcast.
Yeah, interesting points there that Lee Tomlin made at yesterday's presser. Being from the southwest, I'm very familiar with Mr. Tomlin, following very closely in his development with Bristol City. And a couple of things that came out of his spell there were the fact that initially he came on loan from Bournemouth in the 16-17 campaign. In the 15-16 campaign, I should say, the latter half of that, scored about 6 or 7 goals, was an absolute maestro in keeping Bristol City up in the Championship in that season, and kind of almost keeping Lee Johnson's job intact, I would actually argue, as well at that point, as he was under the cosh a bit from fans and members of the football club. But it got into the 16-17 campaign. He started really well, was scoring some wonderful goals, including a brilliant free kick against Aston Villa. But then some really kind of shocking news halfway through the season. He got charged with GBH on a night out, which was a very rogue kind of piece of news, which no Bristol City fans kind of expected at all. Fell out massively with Lee Johnson. They kind of tried to quash the issue, put it under the carpet a lot. Tomlin wasn't being played during the second half of the 16-17 campaign, in which, again, Bristol City survived by the skin of their teeth. Of course, doing a lot better now in the playoff places, but he was always very arrogant, especially at press conferences as well that I've been to and noticed his kind of behaviour. He said that the chairman forked out for a lot for me to be here when he arrived from Bournemouth, which again was a kind of very suggestive and, you know, implications of a little bit of arrogance there. But interesting in that he's not really got on with a lot of managers that he's been with, Eddie Howe at Bournemouth, Warnock as well. It's quite interesting, isn't it, how he has this almost special relationship with Karanka, and you really hope that Karanka can almost tame him in some way to become the footballer that we know Tomlin to be.
Yeah, and he knows the challenges in front of him, because obviously he's worked with him at Middlesbrough before, and he's done well with him at Middlesbrough before. He seemed in good spirits yesterday. He, you know, Karanka did allude to before exactly the type of character that you've just referred to. He said, as you've just heard, it's one of these players that one minute you want to kill him and the next he's scoring, winning you the game with a goal. I don't, to be honest with you, from my experiences with Karanga, from going to the press conferences and speaking to him, there's no way he'd have Lee Tomlin in the side if he thought he was going to be a disruptive influence. So from that point of view, I think that he must know something that we don't, that he says to Lee Tomlin, or Lee Tomlin says to him, or maybe behind closed doors some texts have been exchanged, because he hasn't had a great season at Cardiff and Neil Warnock's not really a like if you're having a, say for example, if you've got a rogue player, it's sort of fire meeting fire. Warnock and Tomlin butting heads almost in a similar vein, in the way that Lee Johnson would have also. So on that front, I say yes, it is interesting. But then to counter it, I think knowing Karanka, if he wasn't 100% sure he could get the best out of Tomlin, he wouldn't have bothered signing him, because it's going to be detrimental to his squad then.
It's interesting when you look at the parallel kind of characters between Lee Johnson and Bristol City trying to manage Lee Tomlin, and Karanka at Nottingham Forest trying to manage him. Of course, Karanka's got the previous knowledge of what Tomlin is like. I mean, there's kind of no bad feeling really about the fact he wasn't getting in the team at Middlesbrough when they were in the Premier League. It was just kind of part and parcel of the squad at that time and the kind of squad rotation that he had, and the fact that, you know, he did get farmed out to Bournemouth as well. He kind of fell out with Eddie Howe. But Eddie Howe and Lee Johnson, both very young gaffers. Very, very young gaffers, still kind of learning their trade.
He's a young man as well, Tomlin, isn't he? So yeah.
Exactly, you know, and there's not much of a kind of age difference between Tomlin and both Howe and Johnson. So in that sense, it's quite clear that there was obviously that kind of fractious relationship,
yeah,
I think, between them. And he probably has a fractious relationship in that Eddie Howe and Johnson probably didn't like the fact that he was getting a bit too big for his boots and being too vocal in the dressing room. You can only presume, but that would be the kind of attitude that you'd assume Tomlin to have with his kind of aura and his previous behaviour.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you've got young players in the squad, a very young squad, looking up to a role model like that, it doesn't set a good precedent. And I think when you're just telling the story there, it sort of evoked imagery in my head of Andre Villas-Boas at Chelsea. And when he was sort of younger than John Terry, Frank Lampard, Didier Drogba, and then all of a sudden he'd lost the dressing room because he didn't have any authority. So maybe that's an issue with, maybe he likes an older man to try and sort him out a little bit and keep him on the straight and narrow.
Well, we do hope indeed that Karanka is able to tame Lee Tomlin and get him firing in some goals for Nottingham Forest, of course, against Hull this weekend. Hull have been on a bit of a rocky run, haven't they, in the Championship this season, not quite doing as well as some might have expected. How do you see the game going on Saturday, Dave?
As I've already alluded to, I think it's not so much about Hull this week, and it's all about Forest. I think they'll really put on a great display with the week that Karanka's had with them. They can't keep losing forever, and I think this week will be the week, because Karanka's a bit, he's quite like, if he loses the game, he wants to win the back. He wants to beat Hull again. And they've obviously lost to Hull in the FA Cup a couple of weeks ago. And he'll be wanting to put that right. It'll be keeping him awake. So he'd been working out ways to, you know, get Hull and get goals in and shore up the back and make sure they don't concede those type of goals again. So I think it'll be a convincing Forest victory. I'll go for 2-0, return the favour while they gave us in the FA Cup.
2-0. I'm going to go for 2-1 to Forest. I think Hull might nick a goal. Well, moving back over the river at NG2, and we heard from Kevin Nolan yesterday as he did a question and answer session with Notts supporters at Beer Keller in Nottingham City Centre. The Notts County gaffer told us some very, very funny stories about his time at West Ham United and at Newcastle, one of those being a certain incident with Andy Carroll and a car.
For 4 to 6 weeks. So I rang the missus, and I don't think she quite got it, because she was shopping at the time. And she went shopping, cold shopping, by the way, because she doesn't like that. She was actually food shopping. She hates that even more, because that's why she wasn't listening to me when I was going, "Well, Andy's going to come and live with us for a bit. Is that okay?" She's going, "I don't care, Kevin. I've just got to find where the tomatoes are." And I was like, "Yeah, but he's coming to live with us." And she was like, whatever, just ring me back in half an hour when I'm out of this shop." I went, "All right." Okay, so I've rang me agent back and gone, "Yeah, she's sweet with it, but I'm just going, maybe not." So, anyway, we're there, and obviously a couple of nights he'd been there. And then Andy decides to get a Range Rover, which is chrome. Right, so you can imagine there's only one idiot in the Newcastle who would have a chrome Range Rover, and it's Andy Callum. And he decides to put it on my drive because so my car's parked, and my car parked here, and his is parked right next to mine. And we just had my little boy at the time. and he's only a baby, we miss it all. And Mike Ashley and Derek Lambias, we've had a phone call from them to say, because of what's happened previously, we'll wait for these two. They're having an argument about Xbox and PlayStation, which is best. I call PS4, so... Yeah, so anyway, my little boy is only a few weeks old, or a couple of months, I should say. My missus is there, and she's sitting there watching the telly, and she's watching Coronation Street, way upstairs, getting ready. And all the kids are, Kev, and I'm like, oh, where are we going? She's having a go because we're going out. So we go downstairs, next minute she goes, what's that flicking of light in the mirror there? So where she's sitting, there's a wall there and there's a light, and it's just flickering, and I've walked to the front door and I've gone, oh shit. Locked the door and walked back in, I went, and these cars on fire. She's gone, what? I've gone, up you go. So God's got the girl, got me little girl, put her in the back. So me and Andy now, looking out of the top window going, and I'm going, it's going to blow, man, it's going to do my car, Andy, you best get out and move my car. He's going, I'm not moving the car, there might be someone still out there. I'm going, well, I don't care, this is your fault, you've got to get my car away. So we're now arguing in the other room about getting my car away. Anyway, we rung Steve Harper, who was our mate at the time. And he had the bollocks to come round, have a look around the ground. He's gone in, moved my car, and his car got burnt out. Still don't know the reason why. I can guess probably why, over a girl, I should imagine. But, yeah, his car got burnt out, and he never got paid out for the insurance either, so it's another double whammy for him.
I'm Alan Hardy, and you're listening to URN Sport.
A great insight there into the player and man of Kevin, and it was a nice sort of relaxed atmosphere there, and quite different to the press conference in a way that, you know, he was able to relax a bit, and you were able to see another side to Nogan.
Yeah, and he was really engaging with the fans, and, you know, doing what they were there to see. They were there to see him in a more relaxed manner, not giving sound bites off to the press. And that story you just said is absolutely brilliant, and for a lot of us, like, we were around when that story came into the national news, and to get a bit of an insight into it is absolutely brilliant. And it was really nice to see. He's been great. I'd just like to say he's been great with us guys as well. I've been going down, as has everybody at Notts County, from the press team, like Nick Richardson, Sam Johnson. They've all been brilliant to us, and those type of events that they put on yesterday really embodies what they're trying to do for the club in terms of community outreach and stuff like that.
There was a lot of West Ham fans actually down there at Beer Kelly yesterday, and one of the points that one of them raised was the fact that Nolan, it's very well documented that he's the youngest ever captain in the Premier League, but without an England appearance. And Nolan sort of said, well, it's, that record kind of speaks for itself, really. It's a shame, isn't it, when, you know, you look back on the career of Kevin Nolan.
He's the record that he it's another record that he holds is he's got the most Premier League appearances as an Englishman without an England cap. But then he did dwell on it and say, you know, that he had Paul Scholes, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Michael Carrick, Owen Hargreaves, even went as far as Jermaine Genus in front of him, and they couldn't get a game. So it's just the timing of it, you know. In any other era, I'm sure he would have got a cap.
Well, moving matters to this weekend for Notts County, and they face Barnet away in London. The game comes with six of the top eight all playing each other this weekend, excluding Notts County, of course, who are playing Barnet right down at the lower end of League Two. This is a must-win game for the Pies, isn't it, Liam?
Absolutely must-win, especially with six of the top eight playing each other. The table will look a lot different on Monday than it does now. And if a Notts County 3 points can get in that, then that'll make a massive difference come the end of the season. I know it's only 1 week, but every game now needs to be treated as a cup final if they are going to get promotion to League One.
Of course, out of the FA Cup now, that will, as we said, provide very much a learning curve for Kevin Nolan and his team. But also, they won't have that distraction. They can fully put all their all into the league campaign.
Yeah, it's all hands on deck now. League campaign, there's no Chequer Trade, there's no FA Cup, there's no League Cup. Like I said, it's cup finals now every week until the end of the season. And hopefully we'll find ourselves, hopefully in the automatics, if not though, at least in a playoff position. And then another great day out for the fans down to Wembley. But we don't want that. We want to go up automatically.
Just casting the eye to the League Two table, only 1 point separates second to fourth. Notts County, both in the automatic promotion places. Forest Green, who were down right at the lower echelons of the table, a bumper crowd in at Notts County that day, and you know they come away with a 1-1 draw. Most fans leaving quite disappointed because they should have felt that they should have got a result, but the same thing could happen again against Barnet. They've got to not remain complacent going into this.
Got to remain level-headed, yeah. And Barnet's a tough place to go, and they're scrapping for their lives at the minute. And Kevin Nolan will be well aware of that. So I think there'll be no complacency whatsoever, and they've got a lot to prove now as well after being humiliated on national TV 8-1. So
just a quick score prediction then ahead of the weekend for Notts then, Liam.
I do think they will perform, and I think they'll run out really clear winners over Barnet. 4-1, same as the Crewe result, and as I said earlier in regards to Forest, a 2-0 home victory. Yourself?
I'm going to go for 3-1 to Notts, with Stead and Lewis Alessandro getting some goals in that game. Well, that's it for us this week on Over the Trent. Do check out our Twitter account for all the score predictions, updates from press conferences and more news, and links to our podcasts on at Over the Trent Pod on Twitter. You can also check us out on Facebook at URN Sport as well. Do listen in Mixcloud, Soundcloud and Audio Boom for all of the podcasts, not just this week's. Thanks again for listening in, and come on you Pies, come on you Reds, and we'll hope you listen again very, very soon.